Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, Philip. How are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
I'm not too bad. I hope you can hear me through this ridiculous mask that I'm wearing, which, of course, is now I can take it off, can't I? I think as of today. No, it's tomorrow, isn't it? It's the 20th, isn't it? I think the day you're allowed to take them off.
Yeah, just keep it on anyway. You're in the hotel lobby in Seville, waiting to get your train back. You were in Seville for last night's big game, which saw Real Madrid produce another unbelievable comeback.
It's incredible, isn't it?
To beat Sevilla 3-2 when they were 2-0 down at half-time. That was the final match of the weekend. Well, actually, the final match of the weekend technically is this evening. Barcelona against Cadiz at the Camp Nou. But these are all the other results from match day 30. Friday night saw Real Sociedad and Betis play out a 0-0 draw. Saturday saw Elche produce a massive performance, beating Mallorca 3-0 at home to take a big step towards survival. Alaves, speaking of big steps towards survival, well, they beat Rayo 1-0. They're in with a chance, Alaves. They looked dead and buried a couple of weeks ago, but they might escape relegation. Rayo haven't won for 4 months. It's beginning to get a bit nervy for them. Osasuna are dreaming, potentially, of getting into Europe. They beat Valencia 2-1. They're 5 points off a potential European space, Los Rojillos. It's unlikely, but, you know, like I say in Spanish, soñar no cuesta nada. Costs nothing to dream. And Villarreal beat Getafe by 2-1 on Saturday evening. A fabulous performance from Gerard Moreno before he had to go off injured. 10 days before that big Champions League semi-final with Liverpool, we will be monitoring his progress. On Sunday, there was another big win at the bottom of the table. Levante won 4-1 at Granada. They've also got hope when they looked completely dead and buried a couple of weeks ago. Atletico Madrid beat Espanyol 2-1. For the second time this season, Atletico Madrid scored a 100th-minute winner against Espanyol to win 2-1. This one was courtesy of a initially dubious-looking penalty converted by Yannick Carrasco. Then, subsequently, we found out that it was correctly given, but it was given for a handball on R.D.T. And we couldn't tell, but the referee could, and then the player himself confirmed it was a handball after the game. Celta beat Athletic Club 2-0 at San Mamés. And then we had that incredible game between Real Madrid and Sevilla at the Estadio Ramon Sánchez-Pizjuán, which Los Blancos 1-3-2. We're going to have a Q&A pod out tomorrow, answering all your questions. If there's anything you desperately want to know that we don't talk about on today's podcast, send us a question. We're going to have a bonus pod out on Friday discussing the midweek match day 33 in La Liga. And we're going to be recording another episode of TSFP Presents at the Games as we discuss watching football in another part of Spain. Join us. It's just over €4 a month for loads of bonus content. We're also going to be taking part in Tuesday's Spanish football live stream, raising money for Ukraine. We'll be live on YouTube from 10 p.m. Spanish time, which is 9 p.m. British time. We'll tweet the link. You can check the Spanish Football Content Creators for Ukraine Twitter account for more details on how to watch and, more importantly, how to donate. Right, Sydney, the talking points. We'll start in Seville, where you are. You very nicely sent us a message on our WhatsApp group, and you said this game was Sevilla's entire season condensed into one match, and it was, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I was glad as well that it wasn't just me who thought this, because as you can confirm, I sent you that during the game,
yes.
Just at the very, very end. And Monchi then, in his post-match interview, of course, the Sevilla sporting director, described it as a photograph of their season. And it felt like it for a number of reasons. It felt like it because they had players back who were then forced out again with injury. So you had Anthony Martial, who I thought played his best game in a Sevilla shirt. I think he's largely been kind of insignificant, really, for Sevilla until this weekend. I thought he played well, but he went off after half an hour. Eric Lamela, who's missed a huge amount of the season, I think this was only his seventh start, was then forced off. Acuna was forced off as well. So you've got the injury, which is what always happens to Sevilla. You have that sort of that sense.
Papu Gomez was forced off as well with injury.
I'd forgotten about Papu Gomez. There you go. There's a fourth.
That was very important, his departure. But yeah.
And you have a situation in which this kind of defined their season, because their season, I think, has been one of being in a position where you think maybe this could happen, and then it doesn't. And it doesn't partly because you feel like they, for whatever reason, don't quite take that step, that whether it's a slight lack of belief or a lack of quality or a lack maybe of just the finishing. And we saw that in particular, of course, with the miss from Rafa Mir in the second half when they'd been 2-0 up. At that point, they were 2-1 up. So it was another chance to basically end it, and they didn't take it. And that is kind of the way their season has gone. And Lopetegui said something very interesting after the game. He described it as a fear of winning. That there was a kind of a fear that it was almost too good to believe that they were in this position, and it slipped away from them. The only thing that stopped this being a perfect portrait of the season was they actually lost it rather than drawing it, because of course it's draws that's really cost them this year rather than defeats.
Real Madrid once again coming from behind in a game where they looked pretty much dead and buried. First half an hour, Sevilla were well on top, then Real Madrid started to get back in the game. And then it sort of changed in the second half. Real Madrid really came out firing, got an early goal back, and really kind of, as soon as they scored that goal, it was inevitable, as it always is. It feels inevitable with Real Madrid when they get a goal back. Rodrigo came off the bench, scored. It was his first league goal this season, but he changed the game against Chelsea off the bench. Now Sevilla. We haven't spoken much about him this season. It's been Vinicius, so the young Brazilian who's grabbed all the headlines, but he is a really useful player, Rodrigo, and there is that spot on the right wing which is open for grabs in this team, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've talked about it all year, haven't we, that that's a position without a real owner. It looked like it was Rodrigo to start with, and then it looked very much like it was Asensio, in particular after that game against, it was Mallorca, wasn't it, when he scored the hat-trick, and then he got a little bit of a run, and he scored a few goals. And we kept saying this about Asensio. He's a player that, even when he doesn't play particularly well, you feel like there's a shot coming. You feel like there's a goal coming from him, something that will slightly change the game. Then, of course, we've seen in these bigger Champions League games that right-sided spot is for Valverde, which is a way of bolstering the midfield. And Valverde, you know, we always describe players based on their position on the pitch, if we take the position on the pitch as a vertical thing, you know, defence, midfield, attack. Valverde doesn't have a position on the pitch vertically, has a position on the pitch horizontally, if you see what I mean, in that it's left, right or middle. And his position is the right of the pitch, the whole of the right of the pitch. And he just goes kind of everywhere on the whole of the right. Although actually yesterday I thought he played a bit more inside than normal. And so there's been doubts, I think, about Rodrigo, but he's very talented. I do think he stagnated a little bit over the last year and a half or so. And partly, I suppose, because the start was so kind of, wow, who is this guy that was perhaps inevitable. And he was really, really good yesterday and really important. I think this is one of the things that makes yesterday's comeback, I think, worth slightly differentiating from some of the other ones. In that you look at Real Madrid, and Ancelotti said it yesterday. He said, you know, this is a team, people expected it to slip up, but this team doesn't slip up because what was the phrase he used? Coraje, compromiso and corazón, right? So he used three C's, heart and commitment and personality or character. And I felt all those things are true, and we've seen that. But I actually thought the reason they came back yesterday was because they played a lot of football. That second half wasn't an epic second half as such. It was just a very good second half from a team that created a lot of chances. And really and truly, although it took until the 92nd minute for the final goal, and at that point you can look at Sevilla and think you're pretty unlucky, and you could certainly look at Rafa Mir's miss and think, you know, this could have all been for nothing, Real Madrid's recovery. But it felt like just the product of a good team playing good football, which is slightly different to the Chelsea and PSG comebacks.
A good team playing good football who are now 15 points clear at the top
exactly.
of the table. They're going to
win
the league.
They could be champions. They could be champions by Sunday. Now, obviously, it would take Barcelona to have a really bad week, but they could mathematically be champions by Sunday.
Are you sure about this?
Yes, because Barcelona, if they lost tonight, if they pick up only 2 points between tonight, midweek, and their game in hand, which they play against Rayo on, is it Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday.
Then Real Madrid would be champions.
Has someone else ratified this?
Someone better at math than me, you mean?
Yes. No. Okay. So you figured this out. But okay, I'm going to trust you.
I've tried to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm going to trust you. You'll understand my reticence to believe your mathematics.
Well, there are 15 points clear with 18 points still to play.
Yes.
Right, Barcelona.
Look, we're not good at maths, okay? I believe you. I'm sure you spent a lot of time figuring this out. I just wondered if someone else had double-checked your workings. But I will take your word for it. So let's see. Okay, let's see if Real Madrid are champions by Sunday.
I mean, they won't be, because Barcelona, I think, will pick up sufficient points that won't be done anyway.
But you never know. You never know. We don't tend to talk about referees, and we try not to. But this was a game full of quite eye-catching decisions from the referee.
Yeah, I mean, I pick up on obviously the Sevilla. It's got sufficiently large numbers of bad refereeing decisions that both teams are able to feel very hard done by, which is handy, isn't it? Because everyone quite likes to feel hard done by. I think the decision not to send off Camavinga doesn't make any sense, and I think it doesn't make any sense because I don't think it's a kind of a debatable one, if you sort of mean. I don't think it's one of these that you need VAR to see it. It happens in front of you, and it happens, and you can see it at the time, and it seems a bit strange not to give him the yellow card. And I think that probably did have an impact on Sevilla, although it's worth asking why it had quite that much of an impact on Sevilla emotionally. Then, of course, there's the goal that was disallowed for Real Madrid in the second half when Vinicius is judged to have handballed it, which, by the way, gave us my favourite moment of the game, which was Thibaut Courtois having a chat with the Sevilla fans behind the goal about whether it was a handball or not, because everyone could see the giant screens at the end of the stadium. Obviously, you can't see them very well because they're very high up. And sort of Courtois pointing at his arm and saying, look, if it hits this bit here, it's not handball. And he was a really nice discussion with the fans. It wasn't angry or anything. It was just kind of really, what do you reckon? Nah, it's a bit too hot now. Come on. And anyway, so you have this. But I think there's a red herring here. And I think it's worth picking up for this very reason.
Okay.
There is a still image of this where it looks like the ball is on his arm. And at that point, as I think you've pointed out on Twitter, the debate comes on where does the arm stop and the shoulder start, or vice versa. Yeah, where exactly are we drawing the line? Because obviously there's a nice little graphic of that, but it's a graphic of a stick man whose arms are not the shape of real people's. Do you know what I mean? So like, where exactly does the shoulder start? But the point is, that's the still image. If you look at the footage, it doesn't look like it hits his arm at all anyway, let alone shoulder arm. It just hits him on the chest. But anyway, it's a bad decision. In the end, it didn't matter.
Real Madrid fans also felt they should have had a penalty for a hand.
Yeah, that was actually at my end, so it was right in front of me, and I didn't see it. So I, you know, I've seen it since, and it looks very much like a handball to me, very, very much like one. But live, I didn't see it.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, Real Madrid are going to be champions. They're going to be worthy champions as well. They might even be champions this week, as we said. Barca are playing Cadiz tonight, and we'll see what happens.
Cardiff tonight, Real Sociedad Thursday, and Rayo Vallecano at the weekend.
Yeah. Speaking of Barca, they haven't played this weekend yet, but there have been, particularly in the headlines today, one player in particular, Gerard Piqué. A story broke this morning, quite early this morning, about his involvement with the president of the Spanish Football Federation, Luis Rubiales, and their deal to take the Spanish Super Cup to Saudi Arabia. Try and just fill in our listeners in as to what the story is, Sydney, and why this is such a big deal, or is it a big deal? Are we making too big a deal of it?
Yeah, that's the question. How much of a big deal will this end up being? Obviously, it's a big deal in terms of the initial impact. Does it actually have consequences? Now, one of the reasons why it may have consequences is that I think it may just be the start. So this is the beginning of the Federation put out a statement last week, was it, or the week before, talking about how documentation had been hacked into. And I think that statement was partly as a way of trying to warn media not to use this. Well, El Confidencial have decided to use this and to publish the recordings. In theory, and talking to colleagues who think they know what's going to happen here, there will be more to come. Now, we've seen before that sometimes when there is a big story from a recording, you think, oh, this is going to be a whole week of incredible revelations and they're going to get bigger and bigger all week. But sometimes the really big one comes first and the rest are a little bit flat. So let's see what the others are. But this story essentially is that Gerard Piqué and his company Cosmos, who of course redesigned the Davis Cup, spoke to the Federation about a rejigging of the Spanish Super Cup. There were serious conversations, including first, by the way, the possibility of playing the Spanish Super Cup at the Camp Nou. And basically, Piqué encourages the move to take the Spanish Super Cup to Saudi Arabia. The conversations have him saying, well, look, the amount of money here is amazing. Talking about figures, I think it was it 8 million? He's saying it's 8 million for every team. If you can get them to 12, it's all about the money. We can do this. We can force them. We can threaten them with Real Madrid not going, and then they'll come back to us. And essentially, it seems that Piqué took an absolutely gigantic commission for this. Now, on one level, there is a little bit of me that thinks, and this is maybe either an attack of realism or an attack of naivety. You can decide which one of the two. This is just kind of what happens in business. Someone sets a deal up, someone takes a massive commission. But it does feel a bit uneasy, even before we get into questions about whether the Super Cup should have gone to Saudi Arabia, and I think we've made it very clear before that we think it shouldn't have done. There is a sort of an uneasiness about a currently active player working in the business world with the federation opening up these kind of possibilities. Now, I suppose on one level, maybe it isn't any different to rejigging the Davis Cup, and we didn't think there was a problem with that. But this sits very uneasily. And remember another thing, and this is something that a colleague of mine was very keen to make the point this morning when I was talking to him about it. So remember that the Federation is a public body. Mm-hmm. Federation is a public body. Yeah. And so this isn't just about whether the Federation can ride this out. It may also be about whether the government wants to ride this out. Mm. I think Rubiales could find himself in trouble.
Rubiales, who... got rid of Julen Lopetegui right before a World Cup for speaking to Real Madrid and agreeing to go there, and he's been doing all this. I don't know. It seems like if he has any sort of integrity, he probably can't continue. But maybe that's a big if.
As I say, I mean, I think the other thing is let's see what else comes out, because if there is, you know, it may well be that the weight of stories is what finally forces something to.
Do you know what made me really uneasy? Just the. This, like, the super chummy tone of the president of the federation talking to the captain of Barcelona, and, well, he wasn't captain then, but, you know, one of the most important players at Barcelona, making money together when he's the head of the Spanish Football Federation. He's an active player.
That doesn't sit right at all.
Like, it might be within the rules, but that just feels... And there was one of the audios where he's talking about, ha, this guy next to me, it'll be Alice, this guy next to me thinks Atletico Madrid are going to win the league. Yeah, pobre. No, he's not. No, they're not. And that was, of course, when, anyway, Barcelona were challenging for the league. I don't know. It all just feels a little bit, makes me feel uneasy. And we'll see what come out of it. As you said, there almost certainly will be more to come. We had to touch upon that because it's obviously a massive talking point in Spanish football, and it's a story that could well develop and bring pretty serious consequences. I guess back to the football, and let's talk about Atletico Madrid beating Espanyol by 2-1. Atleti, again, struggling to break down Espanyol. I guess it was to be expected after their Herculean physical and mental effort against Manchester City in midweek in the Champions League. I mentioned at the top of the show that this is the second time this season they've scored in the 100th minute to beat Espanyol 2-1. Espanyol, who must be utterly sick of the sight of Atletico Madrid. Again, it wasn't a particularly good performance, but it felt like a massive, massive win for them. They're far from guaranteed Champions League football next year, Atletico Madrid. And it might feel like, okay, well, they're not in the title race. They're not in the Champions League. Our season's going to peter out. No, you need to make sure you get that top four spot. C or C, as they say in Spanish.
Yeah. And this is a very good weekend for them from that point of view. Because, of course, Sevilla have been beaten. Much as they wouldn't necessarily want Real Madrid to win, Sevilla have been beaten. And Real Sociedad and Betis, who were much closer than I think we'd realised. I think we'd kind of forgotten about them too. In particular, Real Sociedad. I don't know about you, but I feel like Real Sociedad have been non-existent for about 6 or 7 weeks. And yet they're slowly putting themselves back in a position where they could take that final Champions League place. But they drew on Friday night a 0-0 draw. And actually a pretty good 0-0 draw as 0-0s go. And so it has been a good weekend for Atletico Madrid. And to put this into context for you, I believe we've mentioned this before, but you talk about the having to get in the Champions League C or C. Remember, part of the, if you like, the revival of Atletico Madrid was about the reinforcing of Diego Simeone's authority, but also the reinforcing of the club's authority over the players. And that was a meeting with the club's CEO, the club's sporting director, Diego Simeone, and the squad, in which basically the CEO effectively said to the players, look, if we don't get in the Champions League next year, some of your contracts won't be paid. You know, some of you will have to go. And there was this kind of, and I can't remember who I was talking to now. I was talking to a player who said, yeah, you see, you sometimes underestimate the importance of threatening a player's wallet. It can go quite a long way.
Absolutely. Since that threat, they've been in much better form, although they weren't brilliant at the weekend, but managed to get that win. Yannick Carrasco proving really important, actually. Is it? We've spoken about him, obviously, a lot on the podcast, and I think, broadly speaking, we like him, don't we? He's someone who's a little bit different in this Atletico Madrid team. He's a little bit fallen out of favour in the last few weeks with Renan Lodi taking the place on the left-hand side. But I just find him an exciting player and someone who's capable of doing things a little bit differently, which you don't often get in this Atleti side.
And massively important when they won the league last year. Yep. I actually felt for a lot of last season that I found him frustrating. I felt like the final product wasn't there. But in the last 10, 15 weeks of the season, he was massively important for them.
All right, let's have a look at the bottom of the table, because it's obviously insanely tight with Alaves and Levante both winning this weekend. Just 7 points separating the bottom seven sides. Alaves and Levante joint bottom on 25 points. Cadiz just above them on 28. That's the bottom three. But then Mallorca on 29, Granada on 29, Getafe on 32, Rayo on 34. Rayo haven't won, as we said, in 4 months. 13 games without a victory. That's their joint longest ever winless run in the Primera División. Mallorca, Granada, Getafe, Rayo. Who's going down with Alaves and Levante? Because we're still assuming those two are still going down, right?
Well, we are assuming that, but I'm not sure if we should be assuming it anymore. Levante, bear in mind, have won 3 out of the last 4. And the one they didn't win was that game against Barcelona, where they really could have done. They were really quite close to it. It feels a bit like they've found...
They haven't won 3 of the last 4.
I think they have. I'm going to double check that now.
They've won 2 out of the last 6. But yeah.
That's quite different to 3 out of the last 4, isn't it?
Yes.
Hang on a minute. I'm going to check this now, because
I can confirm.
You've got it in front of me.
Yeah,
right, okay.
It's 2 of the
I'm just
last
wondering
6.
Why
yeah.
why I came up with that statistic then, because I've got it written down on a piece of paper. There we go.
Did I mention the maths thing?
No. Look, so they beat Granada 4-1. The game before that was 3-2 against Barcelona. Yes. And then they beat Villarreal 2-0. Oh, yeah, yes. Sorry. 3 of the... do you know why it is? Because I'm adding a game, because I'm assuming the stats I've got haven't been updated yet. Because I'm looking at these as the last week's stats, if you see what I mean, and adding to them. Yes, I've given them a game that they haven't got. That's classic. Anyway... Enough of that.
Moving swiftly on. Yes.
So it feels like they're finding their feet a little bit. You look at their fixtures, though. This is why Levante are going down. Sevilla, Valencia, Real Madrid, and the last two games, Alaves and Rayo. Now, if somehow, by some miracle, they're still standing, having got through Sevilla, Valencia and Real Madrid. Now, the good news is Real Madrid might have won the league by then, from their point of view. Then they've got Alaves and Rayo, and those are going to be huge. But I think you're right. I think they will already be gone. I think Getafe will be all right. I do worry about Rayo, because this game against Alaves was the game that was going to end it. That's it. It's done. Beat Alaves and it's done. Now, they've got Mallorca. Rayo haven't got Mallorca. It's Alaves at Mallorca. They've got Espanyol away. Now, I think that's another opportunity for them. But if they don't get that, they then go Barca, Real Sociedad, Getafe away, which I think is really, really tough, and Villarreal. So again, they could find themselves going into the last 2 weeks, and their last two games are Mallorca and Levante.
I don't want to hear this.
I know you don't. I really know you don't. The good news, you want some good news then? Some other teams that are going to have it harder. Look at the
Rayo are 6 points above the relegation zone. We'll be fine.
They've got a cushion. And look at the teams that other teams have got. So Cadiz, Barca, Athletic, Sevilla, Real Sociedad. That's 4 of the next 5 for them. Then Real Madrid. So I think Cadiz and Levante probably do go. And I suspect that the team that goes with them right now is Granada.
Yes, they looked absolutely abysmal against Levante. Levante, they've got Comandante Morales. And when you've got someone as good as that in a relegation battle, you're always going to have a chance.
He was unbelievable on Sunday. Absolutely brilliant. And it's not just that he's fast and when he's got space he tears people apart, although he does do that. It's the quality... and the calmness when he gets into good positions, the ability to find passes for other people. And if they can build a structure where you can release him and give him the space to run into, he's brilliant.
He is. All right, before we go, let's mention the Asturian derby. which took place this weekend. You were watching on your iPad at Getafe on Saturday night, and you may or may not have celebrated wildly when the only goal of the game went in for the mighty Oviedo to claim a famous victory.
I did manage to keep it not very wild, but I did get noticed.
Yeah. Yes. What the bloody hell happened at the end of the game?
Well, at the end of the game, the final whistle goes and Oviedo's players celebrate with the fans. Of course, the thing is, there's no Oviedo fans there. Now, there are a smattering of fans here and there. So there's a kind of a sense of Oviedo slightly theatrically celebrating where the away fans would be. Although, actually, there's a small smattering of kind of maybe 7 or 8 fans in the bottom corner and stuff. But anyway, the thing that has been seen a lot is that Real Oviedo's goalkeeper, Joan Femenias, is coming out of his goal, and because he's the goalkeeper and the rest of the team is way up the pitch, he's on his own. Suddenly there are 9 Sporting players on him. Mm. And there are 9 Sporting players not surrounding him and calling him names, trying to get to him.
Yeah.
Like, there's a crowd around him. One of them is trying to sneakily kick him on the shins low down, thinking that no one can see. Someone else tries to lamp him. A Sporting player who's not even in the squad, Johnny, runs on the pitch. He's not part of the squad, he's wearing civvies, runs in and tries to get involved, and they basically try and beat him up. It's absolutely extraordinary. Now, people are going to accuse me of bias, and of course I am biased, but genuinely...
No, that is what happened.
It is appalling.
Yeah.
It is absolutely appalling. And no amount... And the post-match interview from Babin, the Sporting player, who was saying, oh, well, you've got to know how to win, haven't you? Well, you've also got to know how to lose, is a monotone, totally unconvincing, really poor attempt to try and justify the completely unjustifiable Sporting statement. Their club official statement is one of those classic examples of an apology that is no such thing. And I suspect that there will be some really serious, pretty serious sanctions over this. There should be.
This derby, Sid, obviously we've bigged it up because of your links to Oviedo, but this derby is becoming really, really nasty now, isn't it?
It always has been a little bit, but what's been particularly bad in recent years is that the institutional face-off is very significant.
Yeah.
And this time around, as I say, Sporting decided, I think wrongly, although, you know, this maybe is a longer debate, wrongly not to send any tickets to Real Oviedo. And then kind of complain that Oviedo's players, by celebrating, are winding them up. Well, who exactly are they going to celebrate with if you haven't let them have any fans there?
Yeah, it's true. So if you want edge in a Spanish football clash, go and see the Asturian derby, because at the moment it's right up there with one of the fiercest in this country. We've got football all week this week. We've got a midweek round of matches. Match day 33 kicks off on Tuesday tomorrow with Mallorca Alaves, which is a monster game at the bottom. Betis against Elche. Betis might play their under-18s, given it's the Copa del Rey final for them on Saturday. And Villarreal against Valencia. Valencia might just do the same. Then on Wednesday, Atleti against Granada. You going to that?
I am, yes. Yes.
Of course. Celta against Getafe and Osasuna against Real Madrid. Had Real Madrid lost last night, that trip to Osasuna might have looked actually pretty difficult.
Well, that was why last night was so significant, because, here you go, I'm going to risk maths again, all right? Had Real Madrid been beaten last night, and then gone to Pamplona and been beaten, by the end of the weekend, Barcelona could have been 3 points behind them.
Okay, I'll take your word for it, although I'm not entirely convinced.
It would have been 12 points.
Yeah.
Barcelona win tonight, that makes it 9. Barcelona win in midweek, that makes it 6. Barcelona win at weekend, that makes it 3.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to need those figures independently ratified, because I still don't trust you. But yeah, probably right. Thursday, you've got Espanyol against Rayo, Levante Sevilla, Cádiz Athletic, and La Real against Barca. And on Saturday, it is the Copa del Rey final between Betis and Valencia, which kicks off at 10 p.m, man. 10 p.m.
It's good that they finally decided. I honestly didn't know what time it was until about 3 or 4 days ago.
10 p.m. Anyway.
I mean, it's a good job I'm not on a 7 a.m. train the following morning, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Hashtag Spain. We love it, really. Listen, thanks for listening. As ever, we're going to be back over at Patreon throughout the week, so come and join us. Patreon.com/TSFP. We've had loads of new patrons over the last few weeks. Delighted to have you along. And if you love Spanish football, it's the place to be. If you only mildly like Spanish football, then maybe you're all right with just the Monday pod. So, yeah, we'll see you next Monday. Adios, amigos.
Cheerio.